Thank you very much, Jacob, for that talk. Our next speaker is Julia Osman. She received her PhD from the University of North Carolina in 2010 and has been assistant professor of history at Mississippi State University since graduating. She has a new book out, and congratulations for that, entitled Citizen Soldiers and the Key to the Bastille, which came out with Palgrave Macmillan in 2015. She's also author of a number of articles, including her 2015 French Historical Studies article, Cincinnatus Reborn, The George Washington Myth and French Renewal During the Old Regime, and Pride, Prejudice, and Prestige, French Officers in North America During the 7 Years' War, which appeared in an edited collection. Her talk today is entitled With a Man's Valor, Amazons on the French Battlefield and Imagination, 1630 to 1700.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, wonderful panel, for including me amongst your ranks today. Michel Baudier, a self-described soldat, though likely an officer, spared no detail in describing the French army's heroic actions under the command of the Comte d'Harcourt during the 1639-40 campaign in northern Italy during the Franco-Spanish War. Like many memoirs of French officers from the 17th century, Baudier's provided a day-by-day, sometimes seemingly hour-by-hour, depiction of everything from troop movements to supply issues, from the beauty of the landscape to the pain, terror, and exhilaration of combat. Yet his detailed and frankly at times tedious narrative seems to pause and completely change in tone when, as his men clear the carnage from the siege of Turenne, they find the mostly naked and lifeless body of a woman among the dead. The soldiers find her so beautiful that they openly weep for her. And you may think at first that this does not seem so surprising. After all, armies of early modern Europe always traveled with a parallel army of women in tow. And they cooked, and they did laundry, and they helped care for wounded soldiers. And often they would partner with a soldier during the campaign and to help collect and keep his pillage. And in return, they kept a portion of whatever goods they took from the enemy. The woman that Baudier and his soldiers came across that day in Turenne, however, was not a camp follower. In fact, she had been known as Captain Capone, or the Castrated Captain. And she had served as a captain in the Spanish army and a commander of German cavalrymen. Those who had known her had supposed her to be a eunuch, thus accounting for her short stature and her high-pitched voice. With her assumed identity, she had served as a successful warrior on all counts, leading her men bravely through several campaigns. Her men were completely surprised to find that under the male garments and commanding authority was the body of a woman, especially since Captain Capone had always shown a man's valor. Discussions of women on the battlefield, participating in violence, operating in sieges, or going to war as full-out Amazons is nothing new. Joan de Jean, Marlies Muller, and others have talked about the reality of female warriors in 17th century France, especially during the Fronde, and how many of these Amazons wrote about their exploits or inspired literature or plays by both men and women authors. In these stories, women defended their land, like Barbe d'Entrecourt, Comtesse de Saint-Basilmont de Lorraine, or fired cannons from the Bastille at Louis XIV's army, as did the famed Mademoiselle de Montpensier. Following the Fronde, these women faced exile, and many became novelists or ran or participated in literary salons. De Jean also argues that depictions of violence against women were on the rise following the Fronde, especially in a series of engravings featuring Luce de Crou, a doctor who had to decapitate women in order to fix their heads. Certainly, the appearance of female warriors, both real and literary, says a great deal about 17th century French society, how women were perceived, how women shaped their own identity, and as De Jean points out, how their capacity for violence is a potential threat to stable society. Yet, what did these Amazons mean, if anything, for the French army? How did authors and officers fit them into their narratives of fighting and dying on the French frontier? What can studying Amazons tell us not just about women, but about war? John Lynn has argued that, quote, despite its undeniable appeal, the phenomenon of the cross-dressing woman soldier is of limited significance to the history of warfare, unquote. In this paper, I am going to humbly disagree and argue that the phenomenon of the cross-dressing woman soldier is of great significance to the history of warfare. In so doing, I am going to borrow from Joe Lepore's work on King Philip's War, a North American conflict in the 17th century. Lepore argued that it is worth analyzing the writings and memoirs of military men because in war, words are just as important as wounds. It is just as important for men of war to fix the narrative of their combat as the fighting itself. With this in mind, I'm going to examine this episode of the discovery of a woman on the battlefield to unpack what it meant for Baudier to experience war in the 17th century, a period famous for its brutality. While there's a great deal of gender analysis to be done here, and believe me, I tried doing this gender analysis in the first draft of this paper, and then I gave it to my writing partner, who is a gender historian, and she told me to play to my strengths instead. So, I did give it a good old college try, and I'm actually going to be kind of counting on you to help me with that during the question and answer session. And the parts that really want gender analysis are going to be screaming out for it, and you will help. But for now, I'm going to talk about Baudier's story and his attempt to connect the destruction that he saw and participated in to grander ideals. Okay. So before the celebrated era of, quote, limited warfare in the 18th century, when armies lined up to shoot each other politely, a safe distance from towns and cities, European warfare was a brutal, chaotic affair that often pitilessly caught civilians in the crosshairs. 17th century armies tended to be ad hoc, quasi-improvised institutions with little central oversight, often employing mercenaries and bringing destruction to local inhabitants, both friend and foe. During the 1630s and 1640s, the French army was engaged in simultaneous wars across six separate theaters. The size and reach of the army prevented the crown or war ministers from exercising much authority over it, which gave commanders free rein to devastate whatever armies or pillage whatever towns lay in their path. The Recueil des Gazettes de Nouvelles, a French newspaper, could only print horror after horror for its 1640 edition. On the 13th of December 1639 in Prague, for example, the French army was lodged near the Rhine River, where it had raided some villages for supplies. The army also saw that there were 500 Spanish in the village of Trabac, which was a great inconvenience. So it attacked and took the village by force. The French killed everyone who did not have time to retreat to the castle, which they then lay siege to. In another episode, a few days later, the French soldiers came upon another town, which they decided to pillage and burn. The inhabitants prayed to the army to let them be and offered all their goods, food, and animals to avoid destruction. But the soldiers, quote, demolished the fortifications, burned the doors, and knocked down the towers and then the houses, and left the village in ruin before moving on to do the same to other villages in their path. The participants in this warfare, of course, knew its horror, and Baudier does not spare the reader in describing the violence of the Siege of Turenne, waged at the same time and in much the same vein as these other examples of destruction. By dawn, on July 11, 1639, all things were prepared for the killing of men and for reddening the waters of the River Po and the earth of Turenne with their blood. The French and Spanish represented there a true but bloody tragedy. In the great and bloody combat that ensued, Baudier really likes the word bloody, you'll hear it again, the French army fought bravely, and many were delivered from their hunger by iron, which means they were run through the gut with swords, an indication of the brutal hand-to-hand combat. Baudier himself had been present at this gruesome calculation. In his account, the reader can see not just the carnage, but Baudier's reaction to it. As he takes in the dead, many of them naked from being stripped by the very soldiers who killed them, he tries to justify or somehow elevate the sight. His first attempt is to link such destruction to the much-heralded, mythicized fighting styles of the ancient Greeks and Romans. These standard-bearers of military excellence, whom European warriors of the early modern period continually strove to emulate, did not even have firearms. Yet, they killed in their wars more men with iron than we do with gunpowder. Still, the mountain of dead following the battle presented an awful spectacle. That is why it is such a contrast when among the mutilated bodies he finds not only a woman, but one of the most beautiful that nature has ever ornamented with its graces. Before even learning her story from the soldiers, Baudier hastens to describe her and point out the incredible contrast between her beauties, which cannot die even when the body has no more life, and the peril of battle, the terrors of death, typical of combat. He points out that it was her decision to disguise herself, to cover her beauties with the dress of a man and join the fray, that led to her death. Here he is trying to expunge his army of guilt, for such a death would not dare to have approached her if she had not been disguised. Baudier is able to learn of her background from the prisoners of war who were her soldiers. They tell Baudier that while her nickname was Capitaine Capone, the eunuch, her official address was Capitaine Anzuil. Her nickname, a gift from the class clowns, my translations of mockers, of the Spanish army, caused her so much grief that she challenged her hecklers to a duel, conducted herself there with much honor, and won. It was Anzui's valor and actions as a brave soldier that merited her rank as the captain of the cavalry. Her behavior in combat showed her more capable of leading her men. In addition to always having a firm command of her troops, she would distribute any of her pillage to her companions. She would not reserve any portion of the booty for herself, which acquired for her the hearts and the affections of her men of war. Her men, the bravest German cavalrymen, were all astonishment to learn that they had been commanded by a woman. Valor, clearly a masculine virtue they had always admired, had changed sex. Gender analysis. Even in his admiration, Baudier cannot help but search for the characteristics he would expect from a woman, even one who had succeeded so long in cashing her identity, winning duels, and leading men in battle. Despite her bravery in her last moments, fighting sword in hand, refusing quarter, and showing otherwise nothing womanly about her in this extreme peril, she did cry out when she received the blow on the head that ended her life. Baudier uses this to emphasize her femininity, for such cries customarily exhibit the weakness of a woman. Thus did her weakness betray her most resolute courage. But even this weakness was not framed necessarily as a negative trait, but as a feminine one, part and parcel of her body and beauty. Baudier's insistence on highlighting what is feminine about this woman warrior again demonstrates that her presence as a woman on the battlefield was very important to him. Just as Baudier initially searched to find some redeeming feature in the carnage by likening it to ancient Greeks and Romans, so the presence of this warrior woman adds a poetic, emotional bent to the blood and gore, not just for him, but other French soldiers as well. The very sight of this woman, stripped of her manly apparel, wounded those who contemplated her. Baudier described the effect. Just as the portraits and statues of beautiful characters fallen or in disgrace or in the inhumanity of the massacre picks our senses and makes our tears fall, this natural portrait of a beautiful death has the same effect. As an exposed woman soldier on the battlefield, she is more than the sum of her parts, and her existence allows soldiers and officers alike to contemplate the tragedy of war and express appropriate emotions. Her presence on the battlefield elevated the scene from one of awful carnage to nearly a work of art. In such a way did her presence allow Baudier and his men to find a sense of deeper meaning on the wreck of the battlefield, and perhaps an opportunity to express their own feminine weakness. Baudier and his men fought war in a time before patriotism or nationalism in their modern iterations, although I've just been to several panels which talk about them happening much earlier than we thought, existed to spur them on and help them see their calling as a higher purpose. Likewise, the kind of religious fervor expressed during the French religious wars and even during the neighboring 30 Years' War is absent from his account. How, then, did low-ranking officers and soldiers understand and justify what they did, especially given the level of violence and destruction? Here, the story of a cavalry officer with a woman's body provides a clue. Through contemplating her death, Baudier and his men found an outlet for their grief and a symbol that gave their blood-stained battlefield a higher meaning. Thank you.